My guest at this time is Robert Goldberg, founder and vice president of the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest. He has recently written an opinion piece in the New York Post that ran on Wednesday, May 8th, in which he examines the good news and the bad news in the war on cancer. The good news is probably better than the bad news because the bad news is easier to fix. The good news is that oral chemotherapy treatments seem to be doing an excellent job at targeting cancers that were previously thought to be very tough to beat. The problem is that insurance companies haven't kept up with the advances, and while they will cover traditional, more toxic chemotherapy treatments, they refuse to cover anything more than a tiny fraction, it seems, of the more advanced oral chemotherapy treatments. And he's here to explain why that is and what can be done about it. And Bob, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the good news. Just how much progress are we seeing with some of these oral chemotherapies that can target some of these specific cancers?
We're seeing, thankfully, tremendous progress. Over the last 5 to 10 years, we've been able to take what we know about the genome, turn it into a test, which allows us to identify what parts of our cell are triggering the cancers and develop a combination of therapies to shut them off. So that, and as a result, a lot of the decline, because cancer death rates have been declining regularly or every year since 1993, and it's been actually happening a lot faster. So what we're seeing as a result of the new oral medicines is what we saw with HIV. You get a combination of treatments that's matched to the way your genes respond to the disease and drug, and you're saving lives of people who otherwise would be dying early. And as a result, our life expectancy is continuing to go up.
And a lot of the nasty side effects are not present with this treatment, correct?
Well, that's right. One of the reasons that there are side effects, and I'm not a doctor, but I know a little bit about this, that the injectables or the infused stuff, you have to push a lot in to penetrate to the cell, and that causes the immune system to act up and sometimes wear itself out, whereas with the targeted therapies, you can just target the particular cells or the pathways in the cells and go on. So, for instance, Don Wright, a myeloma survivor, just finished running his 50th. He's run 50 marathons in 50 states, and he was told he wouldn't have much time to live because of myeloma about 10 years ago. And every morning before he does his run or he shovels a driveway or whatever Don does, no one can keep up with him, he takes a pill with a glass of water, and that's his treatment.
We're talking with Bob Goldberg. He is the vice president of the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest. His article in the opinion section of the New York Post ran on May 8th. And there's a story you tell in here that really crystallizes the problem with the coverage for this new treatment. You tell the story of a gentleman named Robert Adler, had multiple myeloma. You say his insurer paid all but a few hundred dollars of his previous conventional form of chemotherapy, but it saddled him with a cost of $42,000 when it came time to switch over to the more effective drug. Why are the insurance companies and Medicare having such a hard time adapting to this?
The reason that there's this disconnect between medical innovation and how insurance and Medicare are paying for things is twofold. First, it's easier to get more payment for injections than it is to get for oral medications. And also, physicians tend to get reimbursed more for injections than they do for dispensing a pill. They actually get paid money for infusing, whereas for writing a prescription, there's no extra fee that they can collect. The second reason is unfortunately an obvious one, and that is, it's a way of, if you can shift the cost to the consumer, you see just how much you can get away with paying. Unfortunately, it's been hurting many patients. 25% of all patients don't even fill their prescriptions for these products at the first crack. Many doctors are putting people on less effective and less personalized medicines because it's not affordable. And, you know, the third thing is ironic, is because these medicines keep people out of the hospital and extend their lives with less toxicity, they're actually saving money. So, in effect, the oral medicines, because they're not paid for, are being subsidized by consumers, and they're saving the insurers money.
Is this a matter of just too good of incentives in the other direction, or not enough incentives in the right direction?
I would say it's 50-50. I did refer to a survey in my article, which said that insurance companies are aware of the fact that this encourages people to get infused medicines, even if they're not the best thing for them. And the other is, it just shows you just how quickly targeted therapy, personalized medicine, has become sort of commonplace in our healthcare. And, you know, rather than trying to, people have asked me, by the way, you know, why just don't these companies do injectables and be done with it? And that's because the most effective targets are found in the cells, and we now know how to deal with them. So it's almost a ghoulish kind of logic that maybe we shouldn't innovate to save lives and to save money, but that's exactly what we want to see happen, and we need to change the way we pay for health care to meet the technologies and not the other way around.
In your piece, you refer to a piece of legislation introduced by Congressman Brian Higgins, Democrat of Buffalo, called the Cancer Drug Coverage Parity Act, which would require health plans to basically provide the same type of coverage regardless of how the chemotherapy treatment is prescribed. What do you make of the legislation, and how simple or complicated is it?
It's pretty straightforward, and that is it takes into consideration that you're not telling the companies what to use, but at least give the insurance companies and consumers a choice based upon what's best for them. And I think that's a pretty straightforward proposition. I'm surprised it's taken so long, but it has bipartisan support. Now that, you know, to get down onto the weeds, you know, to spend something in Washington, in theory, you're supposed to cut somewhere else. Well, the Congressional Budget Office realized that if you spend money on these new medications, you're going to save money by what you don't spend in hospitalizations and having to deal with hospice and so on, which are also very, very expensive. So this is a smart 21st century way to reform healthcare, and I'm hoping that this is just the beginning of reforming healthcare around what people want and what people can do, rather than what the government wants the rest of us to do.
So you like the legislation because it gives choices and doesn't have really a government mandate to it. And you also said it's pretty straightforward, relatively simple. But does that mean it's likely to happen, or is there fierce resistance to this somewhere?
I don't think there's resistance except for I think what's been lacking has been a passionate public movement in support of stuff like this. I'm hoping that over the next few months and into the campaign season that we will have a discussion about, you know, what the value of medical innovation really is, and we get off this silly attack on prices from the New York Times and from physicians, and focus on the value. Let's put it this way, Greg. If we had taken this approach to treating polio 50 years ago, we would be paying for heart and lung iron lung machines, but not for the polio vaccines. We'd be paying for hospitalizing dying HIV patients, but not for the medicines that have kept them alive. So we have to, you know, we have to get with the times, and these times are I should make a song out of this. The times they are changing. That would be a good song.
So the costs, in your opinion, are legitimate. It's just a matter of providing the appropriate coverage based on what type of coverage is already in existence for previous treatments of that kind.
Exactly. One other factor, you know, where the value of people living longer and added income and better health and less disability is about $4.2 trillion in over the life of an individual, collective lives. Drug spending is about 1% of all that. So it's a great, great investment that goes to the bottom line that matters most, which is, you know, having more time on this planet to do the things you love and be with the people that you care for.
Well, the idea of people having the opportunity to have treatments that are specifically tailored for them, but not being able to have it due to the way the coverage is right now is almost obscene. So, Bob, thank you very much for bringing it to our attention, and we'll certainly keep on top of the story. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you for your persistence.
Absolutely. Robert Goldberg is the founder and vice chairman of the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.